Welcome to the Valley College Connection, where John Kawhi and Scott Wigan, two Valley professors, engage in a conversation about success with educators and students. Each week, they'll sit down with a different guest to find out ways each of us have had to plan, persevere, and overcome to where we are now. The show will also highlight resources and services that are working to make a difference at Valley College.
We are sitting down today with April Forrest, a former Valley College student. Thank you so much for joining us today, April.
Thank you for having me.
We wanted to start off with just some backstory. If you could take some time and share with us the journey that led you here to Valley College and beyond. And so take a look backwards, bring us up to the present, please, and take your time in telling the story.
So when I was 20, I moved to LA, and I worked at a very popular hotel on the Sunset Strip, and I worked poolside, and it was amazing, really great time. But worked up to manager, and I thought that was going to be my career. Never thought that college was an option for me. I was the oldest of 8 kids. Yeah, college, I mean, my parents were just happy that I was working. So did that for a couple years.
And April, where did you move from? If we even take your story back a little bit further,
sure.
Where are you from? What was your schooling like prior to even coming here?
So I was born and raised in Riverside, California. I went to Abraham Lincoln High School, which in Riverside is actually a continuation high school. So I worked mostly through high school and barely made it. So when I started my senior year of high school, I actually had sophomore credits, and there was a point when my dad was coming to school with me, just trying to negotiate and try and get me through and be able to graduate on time. So I worked really hard. I really loved that time in my life because I never thought that I was smart enough for school. And then here I was, doing 2 years of school and actually graduating. And I was the MC at my high school graduation.
Wow.
Yeah. So, cool. So then kind of going back, had a really great job. And then I think I may have been maybe 23, and I tried to come to LAVC, and I think I tried to take a math course, and I did terrible at first. And I just kind of thought that college was not the path for me. And then a couple of years later, I found out that I had muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease. Basically, I realized that working, 60 hours a week was not going to be possible forever. I also became a single mother in that time period. So I decided to give college a chance again because I knew, I needed to survive, and that what I was doing was not going to take me very far. So I started at LAVC. I started with one course and did pretty well in that. And then next semester, I went to 2 courses. And then the following year, I decided to go full time. So I did 2 years or 3 years at LAVC. I have a sister that went to, did a semester at SEIB. So this was kind of like a life-changing moment for me. My sister said, listen, it doesn't matter what school you go to, you can do a semester at SEIB. So I applied, and LAVC was incredibly helpful, helped me do all my paperwork, and I was accepted. So I was able to do a study abroad that took me to 12 countries in Europe in 8 weeks. And well, on that trip, I met a professor that said, hey, your only options, and I'll say this, when coming to LAVC, it was, when you talk to a counselor, it's either you go to, Cal State, or you go to, UCLA. Those were the only options that I thought that I had. So well, on this trip, I met a professor, and she said, there are other options. Have you thought about going to a smaller school? And she said, I think that you'd do really well at a small liberal arts school. And I had never heard of a liberal arts school. So she said, you have some great ones in California. You should check it out. So,
well, let me stop you before I get that far yet.
Okay.
So in terms of Valley College, what changed between the first time and the second time you came to school here?
I think the first time, I shouldn't have started with math because I know that wasn't my strongest asset as far as school went. So maybe something like an English class. I love to write, probably been a better way to go. Also, to be honest, I don't know if the mindset was completely there. I was scared that I wasn't good enough. So when I came back the second time, I was a little bit older. a little more confident in that, you know, I'm not a dumb a dumb girl. You know, I paced myself. So I took one English class, and then, you know, again, like I said, the next semester I took two. I did a math and an English and survived it. And so from there on, I think it built my confidence, and I felt like, okay, I think I can do this.
Did being a mom change your approach at all, or?
It did, in the sense that I needed to figure out babysitting. I needed to still be able to work, and obviously I still wanted to raise my daughter. So those were definitely things I took into consideration. And again, starting off slow, it was easier to do that versus coming in full throttle. And I think if I would have did that the second time, if I would have came in and took four classes, I think I probably wouldn't have been successful. So, you know, I think for anybody that's questioning like how to do it, I mean, start with one class and, you know, move from there and do only what you can. You know, it's definitely not a race. And that was kind of a big one for me. So I'm just graduating it in May, and it took me 5 years to do that. So, and that's what, you know, after trying one other time and not necessarily going through with it.
In terms of how did that change the conversation you had with your daughter? Because was she going to school at the time, or was she still too young at that point?
She was. So when I started school, she was about three. So I did put her in she started kind of like a preschool at that time. And, you know, so she's always been very understanding. She's a really smart kid. She loved the preschool that she was at. So that actually was not, that part wasn't too tough. If she would have been a little younger, it would have been tough. And I think maybe actually that was probably another reason it was hard the first time around that I tried. She was a little young. Having to find a babysitter or a daycare that was within, you know, reasonable price when I cut down hours at work was sort of impossible. So
go ahead and tell us. So what happened then after you finished here?
So after I finished here, my professor had said, you know, check out these liberal arts schools.
April, I'm sorry. I'm real curious about this semester at C.
Yeah.
So that was something that you found out about through Valley College. You're a student here, and that was a program that was coordinated through the college here? Or what?
So I did not find out through it through LAVC. Actually, I found out about it through my sister. But
oh, you said that, okay.
Yeah, but I was able to... LAVC was really helpful. So once I brought in the paperwork, which basically, you know, you go online, you look up semester at C, you know, they say fill out the paperwork. You don't have to go to a certain school. I brought everything in, and LAVC was great. You know, they were incredibly helpful. Also, being a student that didn't have a ton of money, you know, so I can't remember if LAVC helped with money, but semester at C definitely did. So that was a great experience.
And you said that you did 12 countries in Europe in 8 weeks?
In 8 weeks,
and
yeah.
So what was that like a little bit? I mean, are you taking classes while you're doing that? Is it sort of study, travel, live abroad? What's that look like?
Yeah, so basically what happens is you're living on a ship, almost like a cruise ship. What you do is when you're on the ship, so in between ports, you stop in different countries. So... Mm-hmm. So you're taking classes while you're on the ship, and then they'll prepare you kind of, your classes will be based on, some of the countries that you're stopping in.
Wow.
And then, you know, you get off and basically you're kind of free to do what you want. And, so I took three courses. And so in those three courses, there are a few study trips. And so your teachers will take you, or your professors will take you. So for example, one class that I took was on human sexuality. Well, in Ireland, they took us to an LGBT center, which, you know, in Ireland, it's something that's still very new. So we got to kind of experience what they're going through as far as opening up, you know, their minds to LGBT being something that, is normal there.
Right, right. So I'm just envisioning on a cruise ship, you're in a classroom with how many students were in a typical class? Is it?
My classes were about 20 to 30, but I took popular classes. So all of my classes actually had to do with, like, I took one in human sexuality, one in race, gender, and sexuality, and there was one more. It was the psychology of gender. So,
and the students were from all over the country, or
all over the country, different colleges. I was actually the only person that was from a community college, so that was kind of interesting.
Okay.
But again, I think that's, access to accessibility. Right. You know, they're not things that we necessarily talk about here, which, you know, it would be great if more people did them. And I think a lot of people learned from me because there was, you know, I was an older student. Everybody was, you know, 18, 19 for the most part. So I felt like I was really lucky to be able to, you know, bring something else to the class, which was life experience or, you know, the difference between community college and the classes that they were taking. It was amazing. I finished that, came home, and my professor had emailed me about the Claremont Colleges, which I had never heard of. And I grew up in Riverside, so I passed them, you know, hundreds of times. And so I looked up, the first one that came up was Pitzer, and they had this scholarship called the New Resource Program Scholarship. And basically what that was for students that were over 25, you know, hopefully had some kind of college experience. And if you got it, they would pay for your whole entire time there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. So I, you know, on a whim decided to apply for the scholarship after visiting the campus. I fell in love with it. I thought it was everything that, you know, I needed. Small classes, which were important to me. They have, you know, these five core values, and I felt like I was already trying to live them. So I did my essays, I did my application, I did an interview, and luckily I got in, which was really exciting.
So. How did that feel? What kind of celebration did that entail? Was it?
Yeah, no, it was very exciting. I'll still never forget. So the colors for Pitzer College are this bright orange and white. And, you know, I was running to my mailbox every day at that point, just, you know, waiting to see if my sister basically had said, you know, if you got in, you'll get like a big envelope. If you didn't get in, you'll get like a little one. So anytime I was like going to my mailbox and I was looking for an envelope and I'd see like a little one, which is usually a bill, I'd be like, oh no. So one day I opened my mailbox and there was this huge orange envelope, and I was like, and you know, all over the envelope, and I actually framed my envelope. You know, I was like, congratulations, you know, before you even open it. And it felt like it was going to explode. I was so excited because I felt like that's where I was supposed to be. So.
Yeah. Wow, that's a great story.
I think the thing that stands out to me when we talk is that you were proactive in saying there's these experiences I wanted, and let me just go look for them.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you weren't waiting for someone to say, hey, here's a great semester at sea. You went and looked for it, right? you didn't wait for someone to say, hey, I have the scholarship for you. You went to say what's out there.
Yes. I also, I definitely think this is really important. I know that so much is done through like emails and online. I pick up my phone and I call everyone. and you know, I'm now in the process of, you know, looking for a job, and I just got a really cool email actually today, and from the department or the public health department in San Bernardino. And the email started off by saying, you know, your name's been coming up a lot. And it's because I call everyone there all the time, you know, just to ask questions, to find out what, you know, what kind of, so they have this really incredible thing, quarterly, it's called an STD task force. And basically they bring together all of these different healthcare professionals, health educators, and they talk about ways that we can reduce STIs in San Bernardino County. And I found out about that through calling. And then usually I meet people and they'll give me their cards and I call and I just want to find out what else I can be involved in, what else I can do to learn. So I do. And, you know, same with semester at sea. I got a ton of money. I basically didn't pay for anything. I bought my plane ticket to London and that was it. They paid for everything because I called every week and I said, listen, I need money. I really want to do this, but this is not in my budget. And they will help you. And, you know, your professors at LAVC, they will help you. You know, I have one in particular professor that I adore, and I can call him anytime and ask him a ton of questions. And I think that's super important, building relationship and talking to everyone that you can. It will take you far as, you know, knowing what your next step is.
Do you feel like you were naturally sort of a social person who had that kind of rapport with people, or is that a skill that you picked up along the way, or a combination of both? Because so many students in particular are people in general are, you know, find that very difficult to reach out to ask for help. There's a whole sort of stigma around that. How did you get so good at it?
You know, to be honest, when it comes to the classroom, I still find myself, you know, struggling with that at times. But yeah, I think it's a skill you pick up. I think you just kind of have to start. So for me, school, again, it was not something that I thought was ever going to be possible. So it was scary to come into a class and feel like you were not good enough. And I know I'm not the only one that feels that way. You know, when you make friends with people in classes, there are so many people that will say, wow, you're really smart. Like, how did you get so smart? And, you know, you'll be thinking the same thing about that person. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that asking questions, that's a big part of it. Being okay with, you know, not being perfect. And that's, I think that's part of the academic journey is, you know, learning to learn, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
And learning to ask questions and, you know, being embarrassed sometimes. But you're most likely not the only person that has that question.
Yeah, I think the big thing is just not being bothered by a no.
That too, you know, yes.
you ask 10 people, you only need one to say yes. And I think, you know, for, you know, some of the most talented people I know who I haven't seen move forward in their career, a lot of it just comes with they get one no or that fear of a no. And believe me, to get where I am now, I got a lot of no's, mm-hmm. constant no's. And it just didn't hurt my feelings. We'll go to the next person. All I need is one yes.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. No, I totally agree. I would say that my academic career has not just been like this completely, you know, smooth sailing, you know, progress of just, you know, all of these great things happening. So my second year here at LAVC, I was taking a math course, and it was a 10-unit math course, and I knew I needed to be there every day, and there was a ton of homework. And during that class, my 11-year-old sister was diagnosed with rhabdomyosarcoma, which is a rare cancer, and it's a very rapid growing tumor that was growing between her eye and her brain. And being the oldest, my parents needed to work, so I started not making it to class. I failed that class. You know, there was nothing I could do. It wasn't one of those things where it was, you know, a class that I could, you know, do from home. I needed to be in that class. I already was not strong in math. And that could have easily been, you know, a point when I was like, you know what, I give up. I failed this class. But, you know, there are always ways, and there are people that are willing to help you and work with you. You just, again, it's not being afraid to ask and definitely not being afraid to fail. You know, and that's not the only class I've had trouble with. I've had trouble in other classes. You know, it's a part of the journey. And, you know, you're not the only one going through it. People just don't talk about it.
Right.
So why do you think Pitzer picked you out of all the other candidates?
So again, I think they have this interview process. So you can go in, and it's optional. You can go in for a 15-minute interview. My interview ended up being an hour and a half, which I think once I left that interview, I knew I was pretty lucky, pretty positive I was getting in. But I think that a lot of it was my experience, my life experience. And again, kind of like we were saying, not being afraid to fail. You know, I went into that interview and I told them, hey, just so you know, you're going to see on my transcript when I send it, I failed miserably in this math class. And, you know, and I told them why, but like, you know, all of my grades here from LAVC were not, I wasn't a straight A student. You know, I struggled. They were understanding of that. You know, they understood that I had, you know, life going on, and that I wasn't going to be a traditional student that just came straight from high school. And they appreciated that, and they appreciated that I was willing to work hard. So I think those were probably my biggest selling points when I went in, and also kind of what I used to write.
My cousin went to Pitzer also.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, for her parents to get her there, right? The best prep school in Hawaii, straight A's, ridiculous amount of SAT prep. And the thing I really respect about Pitzer is that they realize that a school full of just those kind of students is a pretty boring school.
Yes.
And I really respect that Pitzer has gone out and says that there's more than just being in band.
Yeah.
And there's more than a high GPA and a high SAT. And a school really needs to have a life experience to have a richness.
Yes. And they actually, they've got some really cool stuff coming up. And I know they're really trying to. And, you know, and I'm hoping that people that listen to this interview, and, you know, I'm willing to give my email address to, apply, because they want it to grow. I don't think that they have a ton of people apply because they don't have a ton of people that know about it. But yeah, I mean, they definitely want that in the classroom. And, you know, I've definitely learned a lot from the students there. But yeah, I went in, I think, originally feeling like I do not belong at this school. These kids are so smart. You know, a lot of them had went to private schools or, you know, came from really wealthy families. And I just, I did not fit that. But I eventually learned I did bring something to the classroom, and that was being able to talk about experiences with sexism in the workforce. And, you know, these are things that we would talk about in classes. And, you know, we could talk about them happening, but nobody had ever really experienced them. And I could say, hey, you know, when I was pregnant, my job wanted to take me off the floor because I was, they thought I was going to become emotional and not be able to handle my job. I know what those things feel like. And people were like, wow, those things really happen. And it was like, yes, they absolutely do. And that was a learning experience for me too, to know that, you know, smarts is not just about how many books you've read, but like your life experiences. And I think that more schools would benefit from that. Absolutely. And I think that that's one of the great things about community college.
I'm always trying to push my students to apply to small liberal arts schools. I say, don't go unless they give you money, but you know, don't apologize about your history.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, going to school and being poor, going to school and being a mom, these are hard things, right? These are very, very hard things. And that for a lot of the students over here, they're sort of embarrassed that they had to struggle to get here, not understanding that that's an asset.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, Pitzer definitely, again, you know, I just met with a professor about this because, you know, being a new resource student, he really wants to expand the program, but he was saying, we're not getting people that are applying and, you know, kind of asking like, why do you think that is? And I was, you know, I was basically telling him, nobody talks about liberal arts schools for the most part. So I love that you're encouraging people because they definitely have the money, you know, and they've helped me do a ton of travel. So yeah, like I said, I did semester at sea and I did that through LAVC, but I just spent the summer living in Vietnam. I didn't buy a plane ticket. You know, I had a place to stay. They fed me really well. And I taught sex ed to medical students, which was a really cool experience. I took 3 hours of Vietnamese a day. I don't really know how much more or I remember at this point. But it was such a great experience. And the summer before that, they sent me to Africa. And they have this really cool program for people that are coming in first year. And basically, they kind of want you to see that, you know, studying abroad or seeing other countries is a huge part of, you know, your educational experience. So it's an all paid expense trip for 2 weeks.
So if I went to Pitzer and I wanted to have this great summer, what do I have to do?
You basically need to apply and get in. And if you're a first year, they offer you...
Is this first year bachelor's or first year graduate school?
First year bachelor's. So Pitzer is just undergrad. That's another really cool program that the 5Cs offer. It's called the 4+1.
Cool. First, explain what the 5Cs are.
So 5Cs are the 5 Claremont colleges. So there's Pitzer, there is Pomona College, there's Scripps College, there's Harvey Mudd, and there is CMC, which is Claremont McKenna. And then we also have, there's a School of Theology out there, and then there's Claremont Graduate University, which is what I'm attending now. And so Pitzer has this program called the 4+1. So when I realized that I was going to do public health, I was in the study abroad office preparing, you know, to do my my trip to Vietnam. And I picked up this paper and it said, you know, you can finish some courses and transfer them over. So I made a quick call and I said, it was the beginning of the semester, and I said, hey, like, interested in knowing more about the 4+1. They said, what's your major? And I told them, and they said, oh, you want to sign up for some classes this semester? And I said, yeah. So within 2 days, I was taking master courses that I was able to then transfer over. So when I graduate this May, I'm also halfway through my MPH program, which is Masters of Public Health.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So there's some, they offer some really cool stuff. And, you know, I don't know much about UCLA or you know, Cal State San Bernardino because I didn't go there, but I, you know, that's what I know about where I go to school, and great, they've definitely offered me some really great opportunities.
Well, I think that's why these small liberal arts colleges, that they have that loyalty, yeah, right? That alumni loyalty. Yes. I haven't sent a check to UCLA. Right? But the reason why, right, they have such a large endowment, right, is because people have a unique experience that they can't get anywhere else. And
yes,
if you're successful after you leave there, you want to create a pathway for other people to sort of share in that experience.
Yes, it's definitely very much about paying it forward. We just had a really cool this weekend too, alumni. So we had a ton of alumni on campus, and basically new resource students and alums were able to hang out. But yeah, I mean, I think once a Pitzer student, you're kind of always a Pitzer student. And, you know, a lot of people that I meet, their, you know, their parents went there. So it is, it's very much a community and a family. And, I really love that part of it.
Did you know when you got into Pitzer what your major was going to be, or was that something you kind of figured out as you were there? How did that work?
So I originally wanted to be a sex therapist, but I feel like school's a really interesting journey in that way. So when I first started school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And then I went to, I wanted to major in psychology because that's one of the things you kind of hear. It's like, you go to school to be, you know, for psychology or sociology. And, you know, I didn't really know what else to do. And then when I got to Pitzer and I started meeting younger students, I started to feel like I wanted to do something to prevent people from actually needing to see a therapist or to be having the problems that you need or that you would have to want to see a therapist. So that's when I started looking into like sex education and, you know, not just about the anatomy of the body, but, you know, mental health and sex health. So, you know, public health is that it's, you know, the well-being of your everything. So when we talk about sex health, it's also, are you, your mental health when it comes to your sexuality. So that's kind of how I ended up in public health. And, you know, I think I probably changed what I wanted to do maybe 3 or 4 times before I fully, you know, said, okay, I'm going to commit to this. And I'm really glad that I did.
And was that a existing major at Pitzer, or is that something that you sort of carved out, or?
It's starting to become that because there have been a couple other people that have wanted to do the same thing. It's still right now considered, you know, a major that you make for yourself.
Okay.
So explain how you can make a major for yourself. What is that?
So I had to write some letters and some essays to do it. But they're pretty open. So basically what they'll do is if you have something that you're really interested in studying, if you can figure out a course schedule and validate why these classes will work towards what you want to study, they will give you the option and the leeway and the creativity to come up with your own major. So that's basically what I had to do. I had to say, all right, I really want to focus, so public health, and I want to do it globally, and I want to work with women. So basically when it comes to like my major courses, I did half in women's studies, or I'm sorry, a third in women's studies, some in global health, and then some in community engagement. So I broke it up into those three and made my major.
So what's the official title then?
So my degree will say Global Public Health and Community Engagement.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so it's kind of like two.
And then what is your master's degree in?
So I'm doing a dual master's actually, but so it's Global Public Health and Applied Psychology.
What's the next step for you?
I feel like I'm still figuring that out. So I've got some job options that have come up. So one would be actually working on campus in the Health Education Outreach Center. And I think that's kind of like my dream job as far as working with, you know, college age students, being able to have the openness to talk about sexual health and not, again, just not anatomy, but like the other aspects that come with sexual health, you know, one of them being pleasure. Also, I've been talking to the Department of Public Health in San Bernardino and looking into maybe some becoming an educational specialist. So those are some options right now. I do blog writing for different websites for women empowerment and health and sexuality. So for example, within the next week, I did a piece on sex and disability. Those are some things I'm doing.
Well, did you want to share your blog publicly, or is that something right now that you're keeping personal?
No, so actually it's for another website. So it's called Sex and Cycle. And so they have different writers, but so as I had mentioned, I found out I had a degenerative muscle disease 10 years ago. And I think something that's become really important to me, again, with talking about sexual health is also not leaving out people that, you know, so people with disabilities, you know, still have sexual desires and they're not represented in media. So talking about that and normalizing the fact that there are people with disabilities and that they are still very much functioning in other aspects. So I like to talk about that and talk about my own experiences.
So in terms of the blog, what kind of, like, how's that helped you in terms of school?
I volunteer doing it. It's definitely, it's kind of therapeutic for me, I'll say that. So sometimes if I'm writing a paper that I'm having difficulties with, I will take a break and I will write and I will send it to them. Also, they are willing to write letters for me as well. So as I'm applying for jobs, like saying, hey, April has some really great writing experience. She's worked with us. So I think passion projects, you know, it's not per se what I want to do. I don't necessarily want to be a writer. I want to be an educator. But they've really helped me maybe come up with topics that I want to talk about as an educator. I'd say that's probably making connections as well, the people that are running these blogs. And making connections with people that are also doing the writing for these blogs.
Yeah, I like doing a lot of message board writing just anonymously, just to work out what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
it just helps, right? And then I used to do it a lot just trying to have clarity and be able to, I find that writing helps me speak.
Yes.
Because you write it, rewrite it, rethink it, rewrite it, rewrite it. And especially when it's a low stakes place.
Yeah.
Right. Where no one's paying you for it and you just get to think out what you're thinking until it's clear. And then, you know, growing up, you know, I remember my parents always told me to stay away from writing because you're terrible at writing. And, you know, didn't hurt my feelings because I was terrible at writing, right? And then you don't really realize that these small little snippets, as you work things out, you just eventually become good at writing. Whether you want to or not, that just the repetition of just doing it over and over and over and thinking it through, it really helps you in terms of not only speaking, but just the writing. So now my big advantage against other math professors when I go for jobs or I try to push something forward is usually I can just write better than most of them now.
Right.
But it there is something to that sort of just daily discipline of like, what am I thinking about? What's important to me? How do I say it? How do I say it more clear and how do I say it in fewer words?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden it just becomes a habit.
Yeah, I mean, I've been journaling since I was 10, and that always kind of helped me through life in general. I think I started probably, I think it was, I went away to summer camp and I was really missing home. And so I started to keep a journal and it was therapeutic. It was a way for me to, I guess, be my own therapist, write it out. And if I needed to go back and read it, I would. But then like creative writing became something that also became therapeutic. So not only do I write for these different websites, I actually have a hobby. I like to write erotic short stories. That's become really fun, and I think I'd actually really like to eventually bring that as like a course maybe for like a health education. I think it helps open up, well, creativity, but also just, you know, kind of learning about your own sexuality.
Just getting comfortable with it.
Just becoming comfortable, yeah. So that's something I do for fun. Just starting to kind of like release that into the world and share that with other people. So, but I've got quite a few stories, and that's been really fun. So yeah, I feel like, you know, college has definitely taken me in a lot of different places that I didn't know existed or even within myself.
Well, when you're talking about the two options, it reminds me of my advisor. So one of my advisors at University of Utah, if you walk through a virtual reality building, or mm-hmm. if they actually design a building, he's the person who actually created the math for the lighting. So when you walk through a building, he's the very first person to do it. And every improvement for the first 5 years was basically what he had done. And he had been a construction worker who used to like to travel the world, go to museums.
Okay.
And he said, one year I had money, so I didn't have to work. So I just went to school. And he went to Cornell, another small liberal arts school, and just found that he had a talent for it. Then with a master's, he just kind of hung around and just kept writing the next paper and the next paper and the next paper. And he was just working on his master's doing this. He eventually became one of the five top people in the world. Never ever just had his master's that never ended.
Yeah.
He just kept writing another paper, another paper, another paper. They loved that he was there because his advisor would get credit for everyone.
Yeah.
But at one point, you have this guy who's a super master's student who is also probably should be a professor somewhere. So University of Utah made this special deal with him, which said, why don't you come over here? You be a professor. You can't be anyone's professor because technically you're on the same level as everyone else. You're just a PhD student, but we know you're not. So we'll give you an office, we'll let you do grants, you can take classes here and get your PhD, and eventually he just did that. So he had this sort of special professor, not a professor, a student, but go ahead and put our name on all your research papers. But if you did something like that with Pitzer, where you have a job there, but you have access to all of the research, all the grants, you have a demographic of 18-year-olds who are just sort of discovering who they are and their own sexuality and the questions that you have when you're 18.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of a sudden that just creates this possibility to create a research history before you actually have to have a research history.
Yeah. So I talked to a professor about, I think another great thing about going to a small liberal arts school is my professors have become my friends. You know, I can text them and say, hey, you know, I have a question. But I had a really good meeting with one of my professors who I've taken a couple times at Claremont Graduate. I kind of told her where some of my passion lies. So very much want to work in, you know, with these younger girls, but some of my passion has also become, so looking into the fact that we don't have really great sex education, learning that like internet porn is probably our top educator. So I started kind of doing readings on that and kind of just looking to see what kind of information I could find. And there is not a ton of research on that. So my professor said, you know, you could probably make a career on just focusing on like where people are getting their sex education from, you know, and then building from there as to like what you want to do. Like, you know, the possibilities are endless. So that's why there's this big part of me that wants to work with college age students, work in the center. Again, it's not about the money, but I feel like I can really make an impact there. And, you know, and also, like I said, I have the support of possibly doing research before I even need to. And that was, again, something I had never actually thought about doing. I never thought research was something that was going to be a part of me or my academic career. But that's something I'm looking into now at this point, and probably will spend my summer doing is, you know, reading as much as I can and finding out as much as I can, and possibly doing some research and, you know, starting with just maybe a small grant and, you know, just maybe get some surveys filled out and, you know, go from there.
Well, I mean, the school's going to have data anyways, just from the student health, right?
Yeah, they will. But, since mine is, my questions will be more so on like, where did your sex education come from? And because they're at a younger age. So like when I was younger, there wasn't the internet. So I couldn't look on the internet, you know, so my sex education and having to find ways to learn is much different than like when I talk to, you know, people that are 18, 19, and they're just like, oh, you just go to Pornhub and find everything you need. And I'm like, oh gosh, like that's the problem. Like, you know, this is how people are learning. And, you know, we wonder why, you know, there's such a disconnect when it comes to like making love is, you know, that's what people think making love is, you know, Pornhub. So.
Yeah. And I think the other option that you have there too is with your master's, you can teach the psychology classes as an adjunct.
Yes, I do like that idea as well. So I do some teaching now as well, but I had a really interesting class actually on Sunday. So I, for fun, I'll teach ESL classes in Monterey Park, and I usually do level one. I was asked to do a conversation course this weekend because the person that usually teaches it is out of town, so they asked me to come in for 2 weeks. So, you know, they had a newspaper and, you know, I said, do you guys want to talk about this? And they're like, oh, this is, you know, we don't want to talk about this. So I said, okay. I said, well, what do you want to talk about? And they said, well, tell us what you do. And I said, well, I'm a sex educator. And I mean, the question started, you know, so most of them they're all older. I'd say everybody in my courses or in that class is probably, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. You know, first their kids are first generation and now they have grandkids, you know, so maybe some were younger, but a lot of parents, you know, were like, oh God, like we don't want to talk about sex with our kids. And I was like, okay. I said, so, you know, how are your kids learning? And they're like, well, they're not having sex. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about statistics then. You know, they were like, wow, like these are statistics for like teenage kids. And I'm like, yes. And they're like, okay, well, what do we do now then? Like what, what, like, how are they learning these things? And so, you know, we talked about kind of just what I had brought up about the fact that internet is just so accessible. And one man even admitted, he's like, hey, I found my kid. And you know, now what do I do? And I said, well, like, how comfortable you're talking about, you know, sex with him. So this conversation course ended up being kind of a sex ed course / health literacy. And it was really fascinating. And, you know, they were basically like, you know, are you going to be back next week? Can we, like, can we talk about this again? Yeah. And like, you know, can we tell you what our kids say about like what we're talking about? And I'm like, yeah, like I would love to. So, you know, the need is definitely there. So I'm excited. I think there's so many different pathways to go into this. And I haven't quite figured out exactly which way I'll go, but I'm excited.
When I was working with you on your resume, I think my son was there too, right? And he said, so what's she studying? I'm like, oh, sex education. And he just did a double take. He's like,
you can do that?
You can do that? You can, like, yeah, you take classes and everything? He goes, well, what would you do with that? And so I'm like, he's in sixth grade right now. I'm like, what would you do to just sit down with someone who could just answer every question you had? And he goes, oh, that would be great. Because right now, he just tries to corner us. It's like, all right, I've got this question. And we just, my wife and I look at each other like, okay, well.
Who's going to take this one?
Like, I'll take this one. You take the next one.
Yeah.
And it's better you ask us here than at school or somewhere else. But, he's got questions.
And you are so lucky that he comes to you, because I will say this. So many of the parents were like, we've kind of tried to bring it up, but like our kids are just like, no. But I do think that's when, when you try to bring it up when they're already teenagers, most likely they've already watched the internet. They have a friend that told them. And so that's why, like, for me, so I have, my daughter is 8 and she's come home and asked questions. And I think the first part of it is feeling incredibly comfortable. Like, you don't want them to see the sweat beads coming off of your forehead, but if you can't handle that, like, that's kind of where I want to come in. Or if a parent really wants to be involved in that, which I think is great when a parent does, being able to be comfortable talking to your kids about it so that it's not so taboo and they're not afraid. And so, yeah, I mean, that's another part that, like, I've learned to want to work with, is being able to talk to parents about it and say, like, hey, I'm not encouraging your kids to have sex. I just want them to make good choices. And mm-hmm. usually when you're educated, it's not such a taboo, or you know that there could be consequences. Either you make good choices or you're more open to waiting.
Yeah, I think the best advice I was ever given was talk to them around third, fourth grade before they go through puberty.
Yes.
When it's just a curiosity, right. where you answer questions and they go, oh, wait, when does that happen? But there's no emotions, there's no hormones. It's not a thing that they're going through. It's more science.
Yeah.
And then, so that sort of led to where we are now, where my son now corners us and likes to watch us sweat. But, we do meet other parents, with other sixth graders, and they're like shocked that, you would answer that question. Like, I've got to, someone's going to answer that question. They're either going to ask me, because, I used to teach sixth graders and seventh graders, and I know that conversation is already happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. And, I go, bring your daughter over here. So her daughter will come in here, right? Like, are people talking about these things? And they're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For years. Like,
started way before sixth grade.
This is not a conversation that she hasn't had already.
Yeah. I mean, so being the oldest of 8 girls, like, I've heard it all from my sisters. And, it's like I kind of can't remember what age that those things started. But I had an interesting experience with my daughter last summer, which was why I was like, oh, wow, I really need to, be sure that we're talking about certain things. But she came home from summer camp, and, I've always been very open with her if she has a question, there are little things, I feel like sexuality and sex should always kind of just always, there should be something age appropriate. But then there comes a point when, like, they're around other kids, and those kids may have heard something incredibly inappropriate, and then your kid hears it. And so my daughter was at summer camp, and she came home and she said, what's a blowjob? And I think that was probably the one time the sweat was coming. And, I thought for a second, how do you answer this to she was at the point, maybe just turned 8, possibly 7 and still. And I said, it's a part of making love. And she left it at that, because I think if I would have been like, gasp and said, like, we can't talk about that, or you'll find out when you're an adult, she would have, she has an iPad. She could have easily just, said to Siri, hey, what is this?
Yeah, then all of a sudden it becomes taboo. And it's not something that's normalized.
Yeah. And right. So, and honestly, she left it alone after that. And that was great. And I love that she's not afraid to ask those questions, because if they're coming up, she knows about them already, in a sense. So,
I was just going to say, I'm really interested in just fascinated by how you were on this pathway where you created your own major, and you had the freedom to do that, but you had the drive to do that, the passion to do that, and you pulled together these different interests that you have. And it seems like now, as you're moving forward and finishing your undergrad and transitioning into grad school and looking at all the different passion projects you have now, it seems like that spirit of being able to sort of create your own major is going to find its way into your career as well. So if it's an ESL conversation group that on the fly you turn into a sex education course that really meets the needs of parents, and yet you're writing your blog, you're writing your short stories, you're pursuing these things, you have so many different things going on at the same time. It's inspiring to hear, and I think it's great to be able to share that with folks, in terms of that it's very easy to sort of get locked into sort of one thing. This is what I do and this is what I am. But you are a amazing example of somebody whose interests are really sort of inspiring what they're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think that school can sometimes be tough, and so you've got to find things that you love in order to kind of, for it to make sense. So, I think with it's coming towards the end of the semester and finals, and, you know, it would be a lie to say I am not exhausted and worn out and that I have not thought about just like not going back to class, you know, and I think we all feel that way sometimes. So, you know, going and teaching this ESL class was really fun for me.
And how did you get into that? Was that thing on? I mean, what led you down to that?
So I took a community engagement course at Pitzer, and the professor, her name was Dr. Yep, and she works with the Monterey Park Library. So I had did a class where we were working with them, and I loved doing it so much that I went back and I said, hey, I'd love to teach. And so they said, well, nobody wants to teach level one. Do you want to teach level one? So, you know, and, you know, I'd lived in Vietnam, and when I was there, and I realized, I guess I didn't understand how hard it must be to come into a country and not understand the language until I had to do it. Because before it was like Europe, you know, you can find someone that speaks English. So I came back and I was like, I really want to do this class. And I did it and I loved it. The conversation course, again, was completely different, and that was super fun, and I'd love to do that again. But when I left, you know, every student had come up and said, thank you, like, we want to talk about this some more, like, we're glad you're coming back.
Yeah.
And then I had kind of talked to the person that runs the program, and I said, you know, all of your programs are on literacy, like, maybe I could do a health literacy. And he was let's talk about it. So I think it's also just opportunities will present themselves sometimes, but like also making your own. If you love something or you find that you're liking something, you know, just ask. And people respond, you know, especially if it's about helping others, you know, and you're working with communities and you're willing to do it for free, like people will give you the leeway and you'll become a better person as far as like what you want to do in your career. So
it's great advice.
So let me ask this. If you were going to give yourself advice, talking to yourself that first time you came over, you know, the first person, the April who first came here and flunked her first four classes,
yeah.
What advice would that be?
Be patient with yourself. Don't overdo it. I think is a huge one. So, you know, baby steps for sure. And, you know that you are going to fail sometimes. And I think that that's a part of the process. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's a long journey, but it is definitely worth it. And you will find out so much about yourself. So, you know, for anybody that's feeling hard on themselves or doesn't feel smart enough, I think a lot of it is just putting in the work, you know, showing up to class, because sometimes we don't want to do that because you don't feel smart enough or whatever. We make up excuses, but just go to class, talk to your professors. They're understanding more than you'll ever know. Talk to your school counselors and advisors, and don't be afraid to do your own research. I'd say that's probably what I would tell myself.
You mentioned the name of your blog. If you could perhaps mention it again, and if you could let students know how, and the community know, if they want to find out more about what you're doing or follow up with you, what would be the best way to do that?
Sure. So it's a blog that I write for. So it's not my personal blog just yet. I'm working on getting one together called Sex and Cycle, and they've got a ton of great information. If anybody has questions, I mean, like I said, I love answering questions because I've asked so many questions. So if I can help anybody, my email, so it's April, so April.Forrest, and that's Forrest, at cgu.edu. I would love to answer questions about maybe just applying to one of the five C's, specifically, obviously, I can help with Pitzer College. Or just, you know, if you have some of the same interests, you know, I'd love to talk to more creatives that, you know, care about helping their community.
Thank you so much, April, for coming in today and sharing with us your story, all the different stops along the way and where you're at now. It was great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Valley College Connection radio show and podcast with Professors Scott Weigand and John Kawai. If you would like to be a guest, recommend a topic, or find out more information, please email kvcm@lavc.edu. That's kvcm@lavc.edu. This has been a production of 95.1 KVCM Monarch Radio, the voice of Valley College, and the Broadcasting Club. Thank you for listening.